Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents When Brains Dream, Exploring the Science and Mystery of Sleep by Antonio Zadra and Robert Stickgold. Read by Bob Sauer. Publisher's note: the print and ebook versions of this book include visual content such as figures and tables. Preface. What are dreams? Where do they come from? What do they mean? And what are they for? Humanity has been trying to answer these questions for thousands of years without much success. But since the 19th century, scientists have been asking these questions anew, attempting to unravel the relationship between brains, minds, and dreams. Now, in the 21st century, we may be close to an answer. Like everyone else, you will come to this book with your own preconceived notions about dreaming. To some people, the idea of a science of dreaming feels like an oxymoron or even an outright impossibility. Scientists study things and processes that we can see and measure. We study the observable, quantifiable world we live in, from the infinitely small out to the edges of the universe. In contrast, dreams are subjective events invisible to all but the dreamer, unknowable to others except by the fragmented and often fuzzy recollections that a dreamer can tell us. For other people, there is a mystery and wonder inherent in our dreams that scientific explanations can only diminish or even destroy. Some believe that science has already shown that dreams are merely the meaningless reflections of the random firings of neurons in the sleeping brain. Nothing, we believe, could be further from the truth, and we argue almost the exact opposite of each of these claims. We began studying dreaming in the early 1990s and, between the two of us, have published over 200 scientific papers on sleep and dreams. But for both of us, the mystery and wonder of dreaming continues to grow. In fact, our long-standing fascination with the universal experience of dreaming, why and how people dream, is at the heart of our decision to write this book. The wealth of recent discoveries and insights about the sleeping brain and the nature of dreams suggests that dreams are psychologically and neurologically important and meaningful experiences. In this book, we start by examining how, as children, we only gradually come to understand what dreams and dreaming are. We then take you on a tour of dream research, describing the contributions of early dream explorers from the 19th century, whose pioneering methods and ideas foreshadowed many scientific approaches to the study of dreams. We look at the works of Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung, presenting them in ways that may be unfamiliar to you. You'll learn about the discovery of REM sleep, when our most vivid dreaming occurs, our current understanding of the functions of sleep, and debates surrounding the possible functions of dreams. We will tell you what we know about who dreams, when they dream, and what they usually dream about, and we'll explore the question of whether other animals dream. We also delve into the content of typical dreams, recurrent dreams, sexual dreams, and nightmares. Then we'll examine how dreams facilitate creativity, learn how they can be used for personal insight, and explore the world of lucid dreaming, as well as claims of telepathic and precognitive dreams. And perhaps most exciting, we'll offer new insights into why we dream. Pulling together a variety of compelling neuroscientific ideas and state-of-the-art findings in the fields of sleep and dream research, we propose a new and innovative model of why we dream. We call this model NEXTUP, which stands for Network Exploration to Understand Possibilities. By detailing the workings of NEXTUP, we show why the human brain needs to dream, and we offer new answers to all four of our original questions: what dreams are, where they come from, what they mean, and what they're for. Along the way, we'll provide evidence regarding a number of claims about dreaming. We don't only dream in REM sleep, nor do we all dream in black and white. Additionally, our dreams are rarely driven by repressed desires. Dreams can, in a real sense, predict the future in a way that we can't when we're awake. Furthermore, dreaming has a cognitive basis. There are reasons for why our dreams feel so real and meaningful. You'll learn what blind people dream about and where the brain gets the images and concepts that it uses to create dreams. We'll provide what we think are novel insights into nightmares and a host of other dream-related disorders. You'll be better able to understand your dreams as well as those of others, and you'll learn that even with all these advances in our knowledge, ample mysteries and magic still surround the world of dreams to keep us all in wonder. We hope you enjoy reading this book as much as we enjoyed writing it. Chapter 1. Thinking About Dreams. Dreams, noun, plural, a series of thoughts, images, or emotions occurring during sleep. This is how most dictionaries define the topic at the heart of this book. While this definition gives us a reasonable starting point to explore questions about what dreams are and how we might think about them, it raises more questions than it answers. For instance, where do these thoughts, images, and emotions come from? How do they relate to the ones we have while we're awake? And why do we dream at all? These are the kinds of questions we'll be addressing in this book, but they are by no means original. Questions about the origins and meaning of dreams are as old as humankind. From the 4,000-year-old Epic of Gilgamesh, the world's oldest recorded story, to ancient Greek philosophy and the birth of modern medicine, dreams have always held a privileged, if misunderstood, place in human history. Dreams figure prominently in many ancient texts, including the Old Testament, the Talmud, the Upanishads, Indian spiritual treatises written between 1000 and 800 BCE, the Bardo Thodol, also known as the Tibetan Book of the Dead, Homer's Odyssey and Iliad, Hippocrates' On Dreams, and no fewer than three works of Aristotle, On Dreams, On Sleep and Waking, and On Prophesying by Dreams. Like many other classic texts, these monumental works have had much to say about dreams, and in most cases they offer definitive but often contradictory answers to compelling questions. Are dreams omens? Are they communications from the gods? Do they represent a truer and higher reality? And how do we understand their meaning? The answers to these questions put forth by our ancestors did more than influence people's beliefs about dreams. They profoundly affected how people perceived the human condition and our role in a largely unknown universe. It is not surprising, then, that numerous scholarly reviews of the historical literature on dreams, from records of the earliest known civilizations to 20th century writings, have found that dreams played a key role in the establishment of all major religions, in our conceptualizations of the cosmos, the nature of death, and the ways in which the secular world can intersect with that of the sacred and divine. In a very real sense, dreams have shaped our conception of the world, including our place within it. At a more personal level, consider the idea that dreams almost certainly have influenced how you came to understand the world around you. Don't believe us? Let's examine how we all gradually, and not without difficulty, came to understand what we as adults mean by dreams and dreaming. Most of us likely first heard the word dream associated with a negative statement. No, honey, it was just a dream. But for our younger selves, hearing that wasn't very helpful. A monster, a dinosaur, a bad man had been right there in front of us, and our parents tell us it was just a dream? What in the world is a dream? What did they mean, just a dream? Just a toy? Just a ghost? Just someone dressed up like a monster? Just something scary, but hopefully harmless, that happened to live in our closet or under our bed? What could that word possibly mean? By now, we are all so familiar with the idea of dreaming that we forget what a strange and unlikely concept it is. We can think about dreams in many different ways, each of which makes a certain sense. Perhaps the earliest and simplest explanation was that what we experience in our dreams really happens. When Bob's daughter Jessie was 2 years old, her grandfather Irv gave her a wooden yarn puppet of a duck. He made it walk around, say quack, quack, and give her a kiss. Jessie loved it, and she asked Bob and Irv to hang the puppet on the wall in her bedroom before she went to bed. But later that evening, Bob heard screams of terror coming from upstairs and flew up to Jessie's room to find her standing up, pressed against the crib railing, her arms stretched toward him in panic. As Bob picked her up, she spun around in his arms, looked back down into her crib, and screamed, "There's a duck in my bed!" We adults know that dreams can seem that real. At Jesse's age, it takes a while to learn that they're not actually real. Indeed, the road to an adult understanding of what dreams mean is anything but simple. When Tony's nephew Sebastian was 5, more than twice as old as Jesse when she got her duck puppet, he had a pretty good grasp of what dreaming was all about. But Sebastian's understanding couldn't stand up to Tony's questioning. Here's how Tony remembers the discussion. Tony: Tell me, Sebastian, do you sometimes remember your dreams? Sebastian: Yes. Tony: Good. And where do these dreams take place? Sebastian: Well, they're like in front of me. Tony: In front of you how? Sebastian: They're just in front of me. I see them with my eyes. Tony: And when you have these dreams, are you sleeping or awake? Sebastian gives Tony a strange look. Sleeping? Tony: Okay. And do you sleep with your eyes open or closed? Sebastian: Closed, of course. Tony: So if your eyes are closed during your sleep, how do you manage to see your dreams? Sebastian: A pause. Mom, Uncle Tony is asking me those stupid questions again. Poor Sebastian. Tony kept it up for several more years, but we can learn a few lessons from this. The first is that having a dream researcher in the family isn't always fun. The second is that although Sebastian was 5 years old, he was confused when he realized that he could see images even when his eyes were closed, and he didn't know how that could be. Think about Tony's question. How would you answer it? Probably you'd explain that it's like when you close your eyes and imagine something, and you'd be right, kind of. But that doesn't answer the question. How can you even do it when you imagine something? And why is it 10 times more vivid and believable when you dream it than when you imagine it? When the brain dreams, how does it create an experience of seeing, hearing, or feeling something that's as realistic as in waking life? Sebastian is not alone in being confused. And to do justice to the story of dreaming, we must address this problem of what dreams are. To understand the concept of dreaming, children, as well as adults, require more insights about how the world works than initially meets the eye, including the mind's eye. And whether you can remember it or not, you probably went through a very similar process as you tried to figure out what these things called dreams actually were. As part of his pioneering work on children's cognitive development, the great Swiss psychologist Jean Piaget systematically investigated children's understanding of dreams as they grew up. What he found was that most preschoolers believed that dreams were real, originated from outside the dreamer, and could be seen by others. It wasn't until sometime between the ages of 6 and 8 that most children grasped the idea that dreams were not only imaginary, but they could not be observed by others. And it was only around the age of 11, according to Piaget, that children came to fully understand the non-physical, private, and internal nature of dreams. Some 30 years later, in 1962, Montreal-based researchers Monique Laurendeau and Adrien Pinard carried out one of the most extensive and widely cited studies of children's conceptions of dreams. As part of their larger investigation into children's development of causal thinking, Laurendeau and Pinard asked some 500 children, aged 4 to 12, various questions about dreams, including, "Do you know what a dream is?" and "While you are dreaming, where does your dream take place?" In line with Piaget's observations, these researchers described 4 stages of comprehension, designated stages 0 to 3. In the first stage, which characterized about half of the 4-year-olds, the child does not comprehend what a dream is, nor even understand the question. Later, in the next stage, the child believes that dreams are as real as waking life experiences, that dreams exist separately from the dreamer, and that an observer in her room would be able to witness her dreams. The third stage, reached by less than half of the 6-year-olds, is an intermediary step during which the child goes from a view of the dream as an external event happening in front of my eyes or in my bedroom, to the idea that dreams are like movies that take place in my head. Finally, in the fourth stage, the child, usually by ages 8 to 10, fully understands that dreams are internal, private, and imaginary mental experiences. More recent work suggests that some children understand that dreams are not part of the external world as early as ages 3 to 5. We'll examine when children start to dream and what they dream in Chapter 6. Even so, the steps involved in attaining an adult-like conception of dreams remain the same. We first believe that dreams are part of the real world, then grasp their unreality, then their private nature, and finally locate the dream as taking place within our mind. Some variations exist. For example, some children will say that dreams originate from inside my head, but still think their dreams are real and visible to outside observers, such as people sleeping nearby or others present in their bedroom. Other children understand the private and subjective nature of dreams, but they still maintain that the dream world is physically real, at least while they are in it. Of course, some adults believe this too. Moreover, even after understanding the unreal, private, and internal qualities of dreams, some children, when asked where dreams come from, answer that dreams originate from the air, the sky, or the night. Depending on their culture and beliefs, some children will say that dreams come from supernatural sources such as God or heaven. As Laurent Doe and Pinard pointed out, far from being characteristic of the most primitive beliefs, the recourse to divine or supernatural being may be observed at all levels. Indeed, even in children who hold the strongest convictions about the subjectiveness and individuality of dreams, a reference to the action of a divine power may often occur. In many ways, the development of children's conceptions of dreams mimics how society's conceptualization of dreaming has evolved across millennia. Perhaps as we transition out of early childhood, we come to believe that we understand the nature and origins of dreams when, in fact, we've merely internalized what our elders have told us about what dreams are and where they come from. What if instead of learning that dreams take place inside your head, we had been told that dreams are sent to us by higher powers to guide or deceive us, or that dreams take us to real places in physical or spiritual worlds? Cognitive milestones are clearly needed to achieve an adult understanding of the modern-day concept of dreaming. But our own dream experiences, coupled with what our parents, friends, and society tell us about dreams, all play a role in how we ultimately come to view those perplexing nocturnal experiences, including their origins, worth, and meaning, or lack thereof. Let's return for a moment to the idea that an understanding of dreams requires the ability to distinguish between real and imagined events. As adults, we sometimes recall a memory and ask ourselves, did that really happen or did I dream it? Usually these are vague recollections, hard to place in space and time. But sometimes, and for some people, they're very clear. A colleague of Bob's, Tom Scammell, is a physician and researcher who studies the sleep disorder narcolepsy, a neurological disorder that affects the control of sleep-wake cycles. He came to Bob one day and described a narcolepsy patient, a young girl, who had thrown herself down a flight of stairs to show her brother how she could fly. As you might expect, she fell heavily down the stairs. But she was not to be dissuaded. She was so sure she could fly, she climbed back up the stairs and tried again. She had had a dream of flying that was so real, she was sure it had actually occurred. "I think that happens a lot," Tom told Bob. It turns out he was right. Together with Tom and other colleagues in Boston and the Netherlands, Bob conducted a study that put this question to 46 narcoleptic patients and another 41 control participants. Have you ever had the experience of being unsure whether something was real or if it was from a dream? In follow-up interviews, the researchers made clear that they were talking about confusions that lasted for at least hours and for which patients sought out additional information to clarify whether the event had actually happened. In the end, only about 15% of the control participants described ever having been unsure whether something was real or from a dream, and only 2 people reported having this experience more than once in their lives. In contrast, over 3/4 of the patients described such instances, and all but 1 of them reported it happened at least once a month. In fact, 2/3 said it happened at least once a week. Although narcolepsy patients generally report more vivid dreaming than other individuals, those patients who reported these experiences did not report more vivid dreaming than those who did not, so the confusion cannot be attributed to more vivid dreaming. Instead, the problem might result from abnormally strong memories of the dreams being created because of neurological and neurochemical abnormalities associated with the disorder. As of this writing, we still don't know why patients with narcolepsy suffer from this malady. But we do know that the confusion is intense and has major effects on their lives. One of the patients in the study, after dreaming that a young girl had drowned in a nearby lake, asked his wife to turn on the local news in full expectation that the event would be covered. Another patient experienced sexual dreams of being unfaithful to her husband. She believed this had actually happened and felt guilty about it until she chanced to run into the lover from her dreams and realized that they had not seen each other in years and had never been romantically involved. Several patients dreamed that their parents, children, or pets had died, believing that this was true. One patient even made a phone call about funeral arrangements until, to their great shock and relief, the presumably dead person suddenly reappeared. Confusion between dreams and wakefulness isn't limited to people with narcolepsy. False awakenings, in which people dream that they have woken up, often in their habitual sleep environment, can happen to anyone. In these dreams within dreams, people may wake up, get out of bed, shower, and be about to fix themselves breakfast when, to their utter astonishment, they wake up again. People who've experienced a false awakening are often amazed by the dream's exquisitely rendered details that helped fool them into believing they were awake. The dream looked and felt incredibly real to them, so real, in fact, that they mistook it for reality. In his home-based studies on dreams, Tony has collected over 15,000 dream reports from hundreds of men and women. In several of these studies, people have spontaneously noted waking up from a dream in the middle of the night, taking the time to write down the recalled dream before going back to sleep, and then finding their dream diary blank in the morning. In these cases, people dreamed that they woke up and recorded their previous dream, either in writing or via voice recording, and then woke up convinced that what had in fact been a dream had actually occurred. The uncertainty surrounding the states of dreaming and wakefulness was perhaps best captured by the influential Chinese philosopher Zhuangzi, 369 BCE to 286 BCE. In his famous Butterfly Dream, he wrote, "Once upon a time I, Zhuangzi, dreamt I was a butterfly, fluttering hither and thither, to all intents and purposes a butterfly. I was conscious only of my happiness as a butterfly, unaware that I was Zhuangzi. Soon I awakened, and there I was, veritably myself again. Now I do not know whether I was then a man dreaming that I was a butterfly, or whether I am now a butterfly dreaming I am a man." Our conclusions from all this information are that when brains dream, the dreams they create are not only believable while we're dreaming them, but also can be equally believable afterward. Perhaps it's not surprising, then, that, depending on individual circumstances, we can think of dreams as either real life, what Jesse believed about the duck and the confusion of narcoleptics, portals into equally real or alternate worlds, messages and prophecies from the gods, unfulfilled wishes, random brain noise, nocturnal entertainment, communications from the future, the dead, or other minds, sources of personal insights, problem-solving and creativity, or a window into memory processing. When brains dream, they leave us with all of these possible explanations for what is happening. In this book, we will discuss them all and see where these alternatives take us. We'll find that there's not just one right answer and that they aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. With little stretches, or sometimes big ones, all of them can be reasonable. But for us, the most exciting explanation, both intellectually and scientifically, is the last one about memory processing. We'll have much more to say about it later on, but here's a preview. We know now, based on almost 20 years of research, that while we sleep, the brain is constantly working, processing our memories from the day just past. For every 2 hours we spend awake, taking in new information, it appears that the brain needs to shut down all external inputs for an hour to make time to figure out what it all means. Bob's first computer was an Apple II Plus. It had 48 kilobytes of memory. That's right, kilobytes. That's 0.048 megabytes, or 0.000048 gigabytes, or 0.0001% of the memory in his iPhone, and its CPU ran 2,400 times slower. Despite its limitations, that computer could memorize everything Bob typed on its keyboard, music that came in from a cassette recorder, or pictures drawn on a primitive tablet. It just couldn't begin to tell him what it meant. It probably couldn't even hold the concept of meaning. It is only in the last few years, with 10-terabyte hard drives and the introduction of new artificial intelligence, AI, and deep learning programming techniques, that computers have begun to answer the questions of what the information they collect means. That's the hard part of the job, whether you're a computer or a human, and our brain does the hardest part of it while we sleep. The calculations our brains perform during sleep are almost unbelievable. As for dreaming, we now believe that our brains slipped a bit of consciousness into the mix, in the form of dreaming, to help with this amazing process. We'll describe how dreaming does this in chapters 7 and 8. Before closing this chapter, let's return to one of the core aspects of dreaming that young children often struggle with. After figuring out that some things in life are real and others unreal, and distinguishing things that exist in the physical world from those whose nature is immaterial, children need to grasp that while they can observe their dreams, the images they see cannot be witnessed by anyone else. The private nature of dreaming has vital implications for anyone interested in other people's dreams. It doesn't matter if you're a neuroscientist, clinician, pastor, or concerned parent, you can never study someone else's dream experiences directly. All you have access to is the description of the experience the other person provides, whether it is shared verbally, in writing, or through a drawing, or in a piece of performance art. Thus, the concept of dreams refers not only to the series of thoughts, perceptions, or emotions that are experienced during sleep, but also to what people remember of these experiences and the spoken or written reports the dreamer eventually provides based on her often short-lived memory of the dream. The upshot of all this is that both as a concept and an actual experience, dreams are much trickier than most people imagine. And to make things worse, there is no consensus among researchers as to what even counts as a dream. Interdisciplinary groups from the International Association for the Study of Dreams and the American Academy of Sleep Medicine concluded that a single definition for dreaming is most likely impossible given the wide spectrum of fields engaged in the study of dreaming and the diversity in currently applied definitions. Thus, depending on one's perspective, dreaming can be synonymous with the term sleepmentation, which refers to the experience of any mental activity, perceptions, bodily feelings, isolated thoughts, during sleep, or it can be restricted to more elaborate, vivid, and story-like experiences recalled upon awakening. In this book, we'll adopt a broad view of dreaming that encompasses everything from fleeting, fragmented, and thought-like forms of sleepmentation, all the way to dramatic, seemingly epical nocturnal adventures. In general, however, our focus will be on the more complex and involved forms of dreaming, those rich, immersive experiences that have given dreams their sense of mystique and have intrigued and perplexed humans from time immemorial. Chapter 2. Grasping at Dreams. Early Explorers of the Dream World. When we ask students, friends, or audiences at our public lectures what marked the birth of the scientific study of dreams, most of them answer that it was Freud. In rare cases, people answer that it was the discovery of REM sleep. Indeed, Freud's influence on our beliefs about dreaming cannot be overemphasized. Consider this quote: "The perception or imagination of a thing may rouse a momentary desire which we repress as foolish or wrong. The next night, these half-formed psychical tendencies, relieved of all their restraint, work themselves out. We may assume, perhaps, that in each case the dream was the expansion and complete development of a vague fugitive wish of the waking mind. The dream becomes a revelation. It strips the ego of its artificial wrappings and exposes it in its native nudity. It brings up from the dim depths of our subconscious life the primal instinctive impulses. Like some letter in cipher, the dream inscription, when scrutinized closely, loses its first look of balderdash and takes on the aspect of a serious, intelligible message." Who could better sum up the core of Freud's theory of dreaming? Apparently, the English psychologist James Sully could, because he wrote and published this quote 7 years before the appearance of Freud's The Interpretation of Dreams. Sully had much to say about the origins and interpretation.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?